Welcome back to Good Food. In the early 1930s, a farmer in Georgia discovered Vidalia onions. The state's farming landscape has never been the same. Sweeter and milder than most onion varieties, they became Georgia's official state vegetable in 1990. The big thing about Vidalia onions is that they aren't supposed to make you cry. But learning about the working and living conditions endured by the people who harvest, bag, and load them might make you want to. Journalist Shane Mitchell, who has won multiple James Beard Awards for her work, unpeeled the problems of the Vidalia onion harvest for the Bitter Southerner. Hi, Shane.
Hi, Evan.
Your essay for the Bitter Southerner was just, you know, chef's kiss. What a piece of writing. Tell us a little bit about Vidalia onions. What makes them so special in terms of their flavor?
Well, the thing about Vidalia onions themselves is they're a type of sweet onion. It's a cross between two different types of onions. And what you get is one that has a very low sulfur content. The Vidalia is a yellow granix, which is a hybridized cross between a round Texas early grano 951C and another parent, which is derived from a flat white Bermuda onion. And in Southeast Georgia, what happens is it's on the leading edge of the coastal Atlantic coastal plain, and the region's soil is uniquely low in sulfur content, and that's what influences onion flavor and odor. And so the sweeter the onion, the fewer the tears. And that's why Vidalias became such a special crop.
They also have a really fantastic crunch.
Yes, they do. A lot of people like to eat them raw.
Yeah, they make a great onion sandwich. Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
So what is involved in the actual growing and harvesting of Vidalias? Who does the work?
Okay, so by and large, what happens is most of these farmers employ contractors to sign up workers who will work a crop or a seasonal harvest. Most of them are H-2A visa workers. They're recruited generally through various channels, and the contractors are the ones responsible for getting these workers to every farm who is contracted for this kind of work. And it has to be done through a very complicated system, which involves federal oversight. So essentially what you're seeing are large groups of mostly men arriving for a season to harvest onions. But it's not just onions. They also harvest a wide variety of crops, in the same region.
Are we mostly talking about workers from Mexico and Central America?
Yes. Although there are workers also from parts of the Caribbean.
For the people who work the onion fields, what are the conditions like? Can you kind of describe an average day for us?
Sure. For instance, it starts before dawn. Workers are usually brought to the field on school buses, converted school buses. They're dropped off. They work through the day. Ideally, they're supposed to be able to break for lunch, break for water drinks, break for shade. It can be incredibly grueling because Georgia, even in April when the harvest tends to take place for onions, we're talking like 90 degrees plus in very hot sandy fields. And you want to be able to wear long-sleeved shirts and long-sleeved pants and heavy boots because you need protection from the sun. So you're risking things like heat stroke and other sort of heat-related illnesses. And then, you work through the day, and usually by the end of the day, when the sun goes down, then you're brought back to your living quarters and start all over again the next day.
And what do people usually get paid for doing this work?
It varies, and there's an established rate. The current hourly pay when I reported the story was $11.99 for an onion worker. But the piece rate is variable, which means the type of crop you're harvesting, and it's based on units harvested. So you can, like, $12 can really be like $9. And it just depends on how honest your contractor is that you're contracted to. He might be skimming some money. He might be charging you for transportation or housing or food. So it's not necessarily all that great a pay rate.
You write in your story, quote, at least 7 years ago and possibly earlier, unscrupulous contractors began cutting corners, falsifying applications, downright cheating workers out of their wages and worse. Was there some particular impetus for this to start happening then? Haven't there kind of always been plenty of labor violations and unscrupulous business practices happening in fields long before then?
There have. And, you know, this is historic. It's cyclical and historic. What's happening is the contractors have gotten more and more squeezed and more squeezed financially. What used to be a pretty good deal has gotten worse, and they're cutting corners, especially with regard to things like housing. And so essentially what was taking place is contractors were looking for ways to make more money because they weren't making enough to really make a go of it. So what they were doing was putting these workers in worse and worse conditions. And it became incredibly corrupt in that, you know, some of these contractors were incredibly unscrupulous about how they treated the workers. It's pretty egregious if you read the Operation Blooming Onion indictment.
Tell us about Operation Blooming Onion.
Okay, Operation Blooming Onion is ongoing, but it was essentially the Department of Justice indicted a number of individuals for their practices. It involved human trafficking, it involved theft of wages, it involved people being sold, people being treated poorly, people being threatened at gunpoint, people being raped, people being physically abused and imprisoned. So, as I said, it's ongoing. There was about two dozen original individuals who were cited in the indictment, but I've been told by the Department of Justice that they're expanding their investigation now.
Could you tell us a little more deeply about the trafficking element? Are they taken to other states without their consent? What goes on there?
Yes. Essentially, it starts in their home country. They decide that they want to go on the journey. It starts legitimately, so they have to apply for a visa, and they are supposed to receive the visa, get travel plans ready, and they cross the border. They are documented workers, and they're generally taken to the place where they're supposed to work and where they're supposed to be housed. Then they do their job, they send money home, and technically as their contract expires, they're expected to go home. But what sometimes happens is they either want to stay or they want to sign up for another season. And if you wind up signing up with the wrong contractor, things change fast. You might wind up suddenly not having control of your own life. Some contractors have told workers, you now are not picking onions, you're now going to go pick blueberries, and we're going to take you to this other farm, and that's where you're going to work. And most of these people really have very little choice in this. And so they generally tend to go along with it because, quite frankly, it's still a better deal to work here in the U.S. than it is to work at home.
To what extent are transnational criminal organizations involved in Vidalia Onions and this kind of exploitation of the people who work the fields?
I think the point, Evan, is that it's not just onions. This is every crop in America. And transnational criminal organizations are very deeply embedded in this. But it's, as I heard from a United Farm Worker agent that I talked to, she said, these crops are small change compared to, say, chicken processing, which is a much more massive operation. So unfortunately, sometimes crops like an onion crop are so tiny compared to like soybeans or corn, which are billion-dollar industries, that it just escapes notice. That's what's been going on.
When do you think the case will finally resolve, or do you think it ever will?
According to the documents that I've seen, the court proceedings have just slowed down to a snail's crawl. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but it definitely means that they have to take their time to really look at how widespread this practice is at this point. There's a particular legal term for slowing down a case when they discover that they really require more time to really investigate this properly rather than just indict one or two individuals.
Yeah, we should say that the Southern District of Georgia unsealed a 54-count indictment detailing felony charges for two dozen conspirators on mail fraud, international forced labor trafficking, money laundering, and witness tampering.
That's right.
It's like a RICO situation.
Yeah, it is. It very much is. And unfortunately, this is only one incident of it. That's the really tragic aspect. It's a broken system. These are workers who are supposed to be guest workers. They should be treated humanely. Without these workers, you don't get anything in the produce aisle of your supermarket.
Well, Shane, thank you so much. Thank you for doing the work that you do.
Evan, thank you very much. It's really, I appreciate you saying that.
That was journalist Shane Mitchell talking about Vidalia Onions. You'll find a link to her James Beard award-winning story, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, which she wrote for The Bitter Southerner, on our website. Go to kcrw.com/goodfood.